Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, it's that time again for Murder 123. This is Dr. John Stamey. I'm so glad to be here with my friends and away from all the craziness that goes on in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. But anyway, it's great to be here with you. We've got a fascinating murder, one that is going to probably take us more than 1 week to, how can I put it, to dissect. I do have some interesting information, though, about an upcoming show in about 3 weeks. The young man, Christopher Davis, from Bishopville, South Carolina, who had the extremely famous sighting of the Lizard Man, turned out when he was 36 years old, he was murdered. Four men came into his house and asked him for money. He didn't have any, and they shot him. I have now contacted and been given an appointment by the Sumter County Sheriff's Office to go examine the case file of the death of Christopher Davis. He's famous because he was an international celebrity for about 6 months about the Lizard Man. And he had a great life up until then, and then it kind of got destroyed by just some unfortunate incidences. So we will have all that information put together for our show in 3 weeks. It'll be interesting. We'll see what happens, but just a note, we got exciting things coming here on Murder 123. First of all, in order of calling in, Papa Stroh, the maestro of wrestling, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Well, doing great, all points considering, and just it's great that things slowly but surely opening up again in the world, and I hope everyone is happy and safe wherever they are.
Well, I can tell you I'm very happy because Cookout now will fill half of its seats inside, so I got to go to Cookout today, so I'm excited.
Awesome.
I'm going to tell you, Cookout can be addicting, but it's great. Well, look, we're glad things are going well up there.
I love the chicken quesadillas. They're amazing.
Yeah, I get two of those along with my cheeseburger as my two sides.
Nice.
Yeah, they are great. We're glad to have you here, Papa Stroh. Papa Stroh being the award-winning actor, incredible wrestler, and host of my favorite podcast that I don't host, WCW Retro, and that'll be on this Thursday night, and it's always wonderful. So we're glad to have you, Papa Stroh. The next call-in was the one and only, our correspondent from Hollywood, California, Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
I'm doing really good, John. Thanks for having me here.
We're always glad to have you. What's going on in Hollywood?
It's just kind of a gray, chilly evening here. Not much going on.
A chilly what do you call chilly out there?
I don't know, Dylan, what temperature is it outside, you think? I haven't gone outside. It's in the 60s. Low 60s.
Oh, wow.
Oh. Well, I agree with you.
Get out my parka.
Right?
That sounds like me. Yeah, I like it. I like it when it's in the 80s and rising. Yeah, there was an old fellow where I used to live. He said, son, I don't play golf unless it's 80 and rising. And that sounded like a good idea to me. That's why I ended up in Myrtle Beach. Well, we're glad to have you here, Devin. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And from the murder capital of the universe. It's always a different murder capital, isn't it, Tony Pelosi? How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, John. How's everybody else doing?
Yay.
Wonderful.
Good.
Papa Stroh's doing wonderful. Devin's cold, and I got some cookouts. So,
well, that's the name of the restaurant chain is Cookout.
Oh, you don't have Cookout up there?
We do not. We do not.
They actually,
my interest is peaked.
Cook burgers on a grill, and it's always fresh, and it's always Papa Stroh. You eat at Cookout occasionally, don't you?
Yeah, every now and then.
Yeah.
The chicken quesadillas are amazing. And, Devin, you know what? I would bring you some homemade soup if I could, man.
Oh, thanks.
I really would. I got this recipe with some awesome, vegetable beef soup, but instead of like rice and stuff, you put cabbage in it with the vegetables. It's amazing.
Well, that'd be great.
Oh, that sounds good. Now let's just add some garlic, and we'll add some sour cream, and we're good to go.
Oh my God, you're killing me.
Yeah,
sour cream. Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. So it'd be kind of like
the garlic's pretty cool.
It'd be like garlic. No. What would it be? It would be like vegetable beef stew stroganoff. But anyway, whatever. We're just glad to be here.
Oh,
Robin.
As the stomach turns.
As the stomach turns, that's exactly right. But Robin is recovering from something bad that was not coronavirus. She has been sick. She's still got a fever. She tested negative for coronavirus. We're happy for her to know that she's coming around, and her puppies that she takes care of, they're all doing well. No deaths to be reported in the last week, so they're doing all right. And Robin will be back with us Thursday night on ScaryCast. So that's where everybody
is. Robin, we love you.
Yeah, we do. Let's everybody on our sometime tonight. Let's send Robin a get well wish on our private message thread on Facebook. So let's try to do that if we can. Well, tonight we've got a scary person. We assume it is one person. It is the Zodiac Killer. He was around and active from the late 80s to the early 1970s. Now, there are several different ways to total up the number of individuals that he killed. He almost killed two. They know for certain he killed five. There are probably another nine that he most likely killed. And he admits to killing 57 people, which puts him in the world class category of Pee Wee Gaskins and everybody. Pee Wee Gaskins, just so many. You know, he's not down there in the Charlie Manson category, but there was a lot of horror and terror in Charles Manson. But the Zodiac Killer was probably one of the worst that we would ever deal with here on Murder 1-2-3. I wanted to start out, we don't have any biographical information on him, but we know that for quite a while he was in Northern California, and he was also in and around some of Nevada, in particular Tahoe, and he did make his way occasionally to Southern California. Devin, I guess you're too young. You were too young. You were born after 19. Pardon?
Yeah, and I didn't come out to California until 2000, but, I mean, you definitely hear a lot about Case when you live out here.
I mean, yeah, it's like when I called the city of Bishopville to try to track down Christopher Davis records and the Lizard Man, I said, I'm looking for records on Christopher Davis. Oh. I said, oh, you know who he is? And the lady at the sheriff's department said, everybody in this town knows that name. So it's like, you know, there are some names. In Florence, South Carolina, the name Pee Wee Gaskins just won't go away. So, Devin, you're saying that everybody knows the Zodiac Killer out there, right?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yep, well, it was a mess. I'm going to briefly detail the murders that we are certain that he committed. One was Arthur Faraday. He was 17 years old, and Betty Lou Jensen, who was 16. I mean, she sounds like somebody from Animal House. Babs, remember Babs Jensen? That could have been her sister, Betty Lou Jensen. They were just flat out shot and killed in a little bit of a lover's lane kind of area on Lake Herman Road in Benicia, California. Benicia. Then there was Michael Mago. He was 19.
But you said Valencia. Is that Valencia, California?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there.
Oh, I bet you wrestled there too. It's not an insignificant city, is it?
Yeah. I've been there quite a few times.
All right. And then Michael Mago, 19, and Darlene Farron, she was 22. They were shot in a parking lot in Vallejo. And now Michael survived the attack long enough to tell police that it was a male, a white male, stocky, curly brown hair, between 26 and 30. And that's the first time they had any real notion. Now comes one of the more unusual incidences. Now, I don't exactly know if we can pin this on the Zodiac Killer, but he certainly left his calling card. There was Brian Hartnell. He was 20 years old. And Celicia Shepherd, she was 22 years old. They were stabbed the end of September in 1969 in Lake Berryessa in the Napa Valley. Now, what happened? This is fairly grisly. The couple were hanging out on the ground having a picnic and a blanket, which is another way of saying they were having some intimate time together, which is fine for all worthwhile, wonderful couples. And he saw some dude up toward a hill, 300 or 400 feet away from him. And he said, "Take a look, see what you see up there." And then they decided it wasn't anything. But then, unfortunately, Brian saw the guy put on a mask. And there wasn't anywhere for them to go, so they just stayed there. And what happened is the guy came down, he had on an executioner's mask. And he said, "I want your money. Give me your money and don't worry about anything." Well, I think it was unfortunate that Brian is the only one that had money, and he had 74 cents. But the guy said, "Give it to me. Every penny helps. I just sprung from jail, and I'm going to Mexico. Every penny helps." And then he asked him to lay down on their stomach. He asked Cecilia to take a plastic strap and tie Brian's hands behind his back. And then the unknown assailant tied her hands behind her back. Then he checked Brian's knots on his hand and found out she had not tied them very tightly. So he started getting a little more aggressive and a little more aggressive. Apparently there were no sexual things that went on, but he started getting meaner and meaner and meaner. And so he pulled up Brian by his hair, and he took out a knife and he stabbed him 8 times in the back. Brian was smart enough to pretend that he was dead. He slumped, and the guy threw him on the ground. And then he stabbed his girlfriend many more times, killed her. And then he just took off up the hill, and he wrote his standard greeting on Brian's white car. Okay? And they were found ultimately by some folks in and around that lake because they were trying to scream as best they could, being almost killed. And now, unfortunately, Brian's girlfriend died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, but he made it out alive. And he gave even more details as to the face of, or at least what he thought he saw when the Zodiac Killer pulled his face mask off. And it turns out he led a very interesting life. He kind of made the Zodiac Killer part of how he made a living. He worked on a couple of movies. He's got a reasonable IMDb page. He was even in Mysteries at the Museum in 2018. He married a girl named Monica. I guess many girls in California are named Monica. And they had 2 children. So now what was interesting is there was some scuttle about, well, what did Brian Hartnell really know, because he wasn't dead. And a lot of people have given the conspiracy theory aspect to this, but I think that's very unfair to poor Brian with 8 stab wounds in his back. I mean, don't you guys think that's a little much?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Now, I've got a story here that I found. It has to do with a conversation the police had with Brian. And I'm going to read it until we all can't stand it. He said, Cecilia, his girlfriend, was talking to the assailant and said, "Well, what do you want?" And he said, "Well, now just take it easy. All I want is your money. There's nothing to worry about. All I want is your money." Then Brian said, "Okay, well, whatever you want, you know I'll give it to you. I'll cooperate. And I don't have anything, hardly, but we'll do whatever. Just do you want us to come up with our hands up or down or what?" Well, the assailant said, "Just don't make any fast moves. Just come up slowly." Brian said, "But we really don't have any money. I got 74 cents. The assailant said, "Well, that doesn't matter. Every little bit helps. On my way to Mexico, I escaped from Deer Lodge prison in Montana. Deer Lodge, and I need money to get me there." And so Brian said, "Well, you're welcome to the money I've got. And there isn't anything else. Is there something I can give you? I mean, can I give you a check to go get some more?" That was an interesting thought. And the assailant said, "No." He said, "Well, I can give you my phone number and you can call me." That was interesting. I mean, I don't know where that one was going, but so Brian said, "I want to get in contact with you. I'm a sociology major, and maybe I can even offer you more help than you think you need." Well, then the assailant said, no. So Brian said, "Well, is there anything else you need? One more thing. I want your keys. My car's hot." So Brian reached into his pockets and started patting first front and then the back. He said, "I guess in the excitement, I don't remember where I put them. Let me see. Maybe they're in my shirt or in the ignition or on the blanket. Say, would you answer a question for me? I've always wondered." Oh, this is great. "On TV movies and articles in Reader's Digest, they say that thieves really keep their guns loaded. Do you?" The assailant laughed a little bit. He said, "Yes, it is." And then he calmed down a little bit, matter-of-fact tone. "I killed a couple of men before." Brian said, "What? Didn't I hear you?" The assailant said, "Look, I killed a couple of guards getting out of prison, and I'm not afraid to kill again." So Cecilia said, "Brian, do what he says. It always takes the girlfriend to keep the guy in check there, you know?" So the assailant said, "Now, I want the girl to tie you up." And so he reaches for the rope and he pulls it out, and it was kind of a plastic rope. And Brian said, "This is really strange. I wonder why someone who hasn't thought of this before. I bet there's good money in it." No reply. "Oh, what's the name of that prison?" No reply. "No, really, what'd you say the name of it was? I'm just curious." "Deer Lodge, Minnesota." Well, there must have been some dialogue up to that point, but he doesn't really remember it, and they were both tied up. "So now that you're both, I want you to lay down so I can tie up your feet." Brian said, "Come on, we have to be out of here. We haven't been out of here for a long time, and it could get cold at night." "Come on, get down," the assailant said. Brian said, "Listen, I didn't complain when you tied our hands, but this is ridiculous." "I told you." "We're not going anywhere," said Brian. "Anyway, don't think that it's necessary, or come on, please don't do it," or something like that. So the assailant, pointing the gun directly at him, said, "I told you to get down. Your hands are shaking. You nervous?" The assailant said, "Yes, I guess so." And he laughed very relaxed, in a very relaxed manner. So Brian says, "Well, I guess I'd be nervous too." Now, I don't know about you guys, but I think Brian's got a big mouth. Does everybody agree with me?
Yeah. I think he was trying to talk his way out of it. Maybe try to get the killer engaged to where he would still looking at them as objects, look at them as people, and just go on. Maybe take the money and keys and go on.
Does that work sometimes, Tony?
Yeah. Yeah, from what I've read, it works. If you can cease to be an object, it seems that if you can develop some sort of rapport that, you know, sometimes they'll let you go.
Us heels do it all the time. We villains, we love to do that.
Havistro, you're a special case.
We're masses of annoying people.
Well, I'm going to say something. You may hate me forever, but I have seen you when you're a heel. And you're still, you and Roddy Piper, I don't care if you're heels or not, you're still the most popular people in the ring, even when you're a heel. And that's what I think.
Okay.
You and Roddy Piper are the only two people that have ever had that distinction. So that there is an honor for you, and it's the truth. So anyway, they got down and tied their feet up, and then he started stabbing them. And Brian said it was like chomp, 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 chomp. And so I was kind of like just acted like I'd passed out and maybe he'd stop, and he did. And then he really went after the girl. He walked up the hill. This is just really nasty. And it's the best. I mean, again, Tony, I'm going to go to you because you do work in law enforcement and you have seen things. I believe that's a very good recapture of what happened by a victim, don't you think?
Yeah, but I don't work directly with LA. I'm more of an admin guy. You know, I do ordinance enforcement investigations like that, but I don't do law enforcement stuff like murders and things like that. But he seems like he had a lot of rage. Obviously, you know, first off, you know, he's out doing this for kicks, and second off, he just didn't shoot him in the back of the head and just, you know, okay, it wasn't business. It was, he had a lot of pent up rage to, you know, when you start stabbing folks that many times, I mean, there's something unhinged about you. You have to be angry about something. You know, you have some sort of, you know, obviously you have a disconnect. So, I mean, I think this guy had a lot of rage. I think he had, you know, I don't know that he had an agenda. I don't know that, you know, it sounds to me like he just, and from reading about him, you know, everybody was random. There was no rhyme or reason. He just, you know, he felt like he needed to get his kill on, so to speak. He just cruised. And I think it references that in one of his letters or manifesto that he would cruise. And I don't think he was very well educated because a lot of his words were misspelled. You know, things like that. So not that that matters, but he...
I'm glad you said that because we're going on to part two. In part two, the Zodiac Killer sent letters to newspapers that were encrypted, and they were very difficult to decrypt. And that's what I've never seen anything about that. I mean, I understand what you're saying. But, I mean, it would take somebody with the equivalent of a master's degree in computer security to do what he did. He sent these letters. People are still working on them now. Now, two of them, it seems. Now, I'm gonna go out on a limb because this is where the various accounts of the Zodiac Killer's legacy started varying when I was doing my research. First of all, there was about a 21-year-old boy who he was in college, and he actually figured out what the longest message said. And here's what the 340-character cipher said based on his analysis. And if you're ready, it says, "Kill self, doctor, help me kill myself, gas chamber, days,
oh, great.
Vegetable, every waking moment I'm alive, my pride lost, I can't go on living this way, killing the people that have killed so many people, can't help myself, I'm so angry, I would do
okay,
my
a
thing
now.
When I'm alone, this would end my whole life, I'm unable to stop. By the time you solve this, I will have killed 11 more people. Please help me stop killing people. Please, please. Name is Lee Allen."
Hmm.
Now, first of all, this young man who was in college, he said he wasn't an exact greatest student. But what he did was he stayed up nights studying cryptography. And what he found out is the first part has a certain cipher that you can use to decrypt it. And then the second half has a different cipher. Now, that is not the mark of a dude that talks like this.
Well, I get what you're saying. Cryptology with someone that can't spell, I mean, God, he would have a blast of the spelling bee. Dear Lord.
Well, I mean, you see, that's and I don't know. I mean, that's one thing I want to check on.
Was he trying to throw the police off by intentionally misspelling the words? I mean, because like I said, he had to be smart to be able to set the cipher up. You know,
he had to be really smart to set the cipher up. Because I remember
the last part of your message was so much better than the first part. It makes you wonder if it was the same person using the cryptology.
Excuse me,
yes.
Sir. That is exactly
yes.
where I was going.
That's right.
And were there two of them out there doing this? One was brilliant and one was not so brilliant. And they were buddies. I mean, nobody knows. Nobody seems to know. Well, would you like to know about Lee Allen? How can I put it? He was no prize. I can tell you that. Now, it turns out that he was a military man, and he mentioned about being in the Marines and working with the Navy, and then in one of his handwritten letters, he talks about going scuba diving. You know, and another thing is, it turns out that in 1972, he was convicted of criminally assaulting a 12-year-old boy. He pleaded guilty, and he served 2 years imprisonment. Now, I don't think in 2020 he would be serving any 2 years imprisonment for that. Lewd sex acts upon a 12-year-old boy. I don't think that's what's going to happen around here. And they kept watching him. They kept searching his apartment. And they did find a mask, just like he was reported to have worn when he knifed that young couple. But they were able to do a DNA comparison of him and some of the artifacts that they had found, and there was no relation. Now, he had a friend named Don Chaney. And Chaney always seemed to be on edge with him. Chaney even turned him into the police for saying that he wanted to kill people. This was right after the first, after that first murder, set of murders. So, I mean, they obviously knew each other. And so we don't know. This is, I mean, I think I want to go around the room. And I'm going to start with Stroh and then Tony and then Devin. Does this seem like a whole lot for one person to have done? To kill 57 people?
Well, we just mentioned earlier about the cryptology that you read off. I mean, it definitely sounds like more than one person sending the message.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, he had to make a living because one would kind of gather that he wasn't independently wealthy. Number two, I don't know about you guys, but it takes time for me to answer my email and pay my bills, much less try to write letters to the San Francisco Chronicle.
It's just like writing a letter when it starts off in crayon and the rest of it's written in pen. You know something's up.
Yes. Papa Stroh, you hit the nail on the head. All right, Tony, what do you think?
Yes. He's obviously a very disturbed individual. He seems to really be a little bit more brutal with the female victims than the male. I mean, he's brutal with all of them. But an interesting thing, and it may, you know, it probably doesn't have anything to do with the big picture, but he started his killing spree about the time that the Manson family started their killing spree. The second set of murders occurred, I think, a month before the Tate murders. So that's, you know, that's just FYI. You know, I don't know. I'm not saying they're connected or anything, but I just find that interesting that right before the Manson murders start, the Zodiac killer starts. But this guy, he definitely was into control, you know, but I don't know how many of the victims that he tied up. Some of them, you know, like with a taxi cab driver, he just got in, drove a short distance and he shot him in the back of the skull. I think the first murder, the girl tried to run and he shot her, four or five times in the back. This dude is just all over the board. I mean, he doesn't, like Papa Stroh was saying, it, you know, whenever you start trying to make sense of it, it's like there's two different MOs, so to speak, you know. I don't know that there wasn't two people, because all the evidence that I'm looking at, it doesn't follow the same pattern, you know.
I'm going to say this, and don't take me the wrong way, but also if you're very disturbed, that takes up some of your time just sitting around being mad. I mean, so it's like, how do you have time to do all this stuff?
And it's just so random. I mean, it's like his manifesto. He says, I'm going to go cruise around. You know, there's no, I mean, it's male, female, male and female at the same time. There's not like, well, I hate women, and they're all females between the ages of 18 and 30 with dark hair and dark eyes, and there's just nothing that really makes sense about this dude. It's just like he just is on the kill spree, you know. It's just about taking lives with him, and maybe that is some sort of control. He feels some sort of, you know, when he's taking these victims' lives, he's controlling either them or something about himself. It's just too,
yeah.
It's just too damn random. Too random.
Well, it really is. Devin, what do you think?
Well, you know, I've even heard some theories that it was actually cults, you know, a group of people that was behind it, similar to the Manson family. But I wouldn't put it beyond maybe, you know, I definitely think it could be one person, perhaps two people, but there is always that possibility that was coordinated by an even larger group.
And they're the murder weapons. I mean, you know, you got I don't know what calibers I'll use, but I think maybe was there a 22 used in one and a
there was a 45 used in one
and a 9mm and maybe a 22 and a knife. So this guy's all across the board. You know, he doesn't have a favorite weapon. He doesn't have a favorite victim. He doesn't have, you know. So that's just odd.
Well, it is. And there have been lots of movies made on this. But I don't think, from what I think, and I looked at some parts of some of these movies on YouTube, it didn't seem like they were asking the questions that we're asking. I just think we're smarter. Don't you?
Well, we have better research tools for sure.
We have smarter people is all I got to say. So yeah, it's just and I agree. I think I can't imagine what kind of a group. Now, Devin, you say people have intimated it might be a cult.
Well, I have heard that, and then it was featured as kind of a plot line in the American Horror Story series Cult. So I know that could just be a cheesy, you know, Hollywood theory, but I have heard it before, and they definitely gave you something to think about in American Horror Story. So in that show, it had something to do with Valerie Solanas' scum cult, who, Valerie Solanas is the one who shot Andy Warhol. So I think it's just opens mm-hmm. up a line of thinking that you could explore for sure.
And it sounds like I have ties to like the Da Vinci Code, if you recall.
Please yeah, there's continue. Definitely so many, you know, there's so many little symbolism and stuff that you could interpret.
Mm-hmm.
And then what about him making the going to the phone booths and making the calls in and reporting the murders and them just being really close to the police station? You know, what's that about?
Yeah.
He's just teasing. I mean, he's just, you know, teasing them, you know. And he's just showing them, I guess, that in his mind that he's smarter than they are. You know, he's going to kill them. He's going to go a few blocks away from where the police station is and call them.
Yep, classic form of psychology, breaking victims down and then do his bidding.
And he talked about after one of the things about when he killed him, that whenever he died, they would be his slaves in the afterlife.
And he also said The Exorcist, the movie, was one of the most satirical comedies he had ever seen.
Yeah.
How horrible. I mean,
Diary of a Madman.
Yes. A very mad man.
And you know, he had a... Now this is interesting because I found this and I took this in my notes, but he was a big fan of movies. And he had this, The Most Dangerous Game seemed to be his favorite movie, the old one from the early 30s. And I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't see some foreshadowing in Most Dangerous Game to what he was, in court of public opinion convicted of. This would have been the most staggering trial. I mean, it would have been unbelievable if they had found him. Because I know even over here in on the East Coast, people were always concerned that something like that would begin happening over here, that we would have some kind of a Zodiac killer, and that was something that always really bothered folks around here. So
The cab murder too. This guy was calm. He was calm. When he shot the cabbie, he took a piece of his shirt and I don't think he wiped the cab down with a piece of the cabbie shirt, but he wiped the cab down about Prince. And they were still, what, three teenagers saw him do it. So, I mean, if you just kill somebody, I mean, you shoot him in the back of the skull, and you just calmly, you know, just wipe your, you know, the doors off and stuff like that, take a piece of the dude's shirt. I mean, you're not in no hurry. You're either you don't care if you get caught, or you're just exceedingly cold and calculated. But the murders, as random as they are, wouldn't seem that he would be that way. But what do you guys think? I mean, when he, if I shoot a guy in the back of the head, I'm not going to wipe down the cab and take a piece of his shirt and just hang out. I'm going to get out of there as quick as I can.
I hate to say this, Tony. That's the difference between us and him. He didn't get caught. He would have been caught.
We would have been caught because we're sane.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's another group of about 8 or 9 folks that Wikipedia lists as potential murderers who could have been the Zodiac Killer. But, you know, none of them are very conclusive. There is one. It was an ex-service guy who walked into a psychiatrist's office and said, you know, I've been murdering people. And he explained some things that made him really sound like the Zodiac Killer. But I've never seen any drawings of what the guy looked as if the psychiatrist said because of confidentiality, he really couldn't tell who it was or describe it. Yeah, that's a... Yeah. Isn't there something... In a law that says if this really has to do with a capital murder offense, you don't have to keep confidentiality? I think there is. Or maybe it was after all this went down. But I don't know.
Well, could it be possible that in his mind, like he had wanted to take a part of his victims, per se, taking the shirt, after wiping down the scene, more or less in his mind, he still has control of his victim, more or less, by taking a possession of
theirs.
Yes.
I think control played a big part in it because, you know, in the manifesto, he starts talking about they're going to be my slaves. I mean, what slavery, if you're trying to enslave somebody, you're controlling them. I would say that's a good possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Now, what about the serviceman's interesting? Maybe that's, and I'm not saying that the serviceman did it, but maybe, and, you know, Vietnam was going on at the time. What if the guy was comfortable with killing in different ways? Maybe that explains the different weapon systems that he used. Who knows?
Well, now that really could. Now, I never thought about that. He might have been well-versed in many different ways of killing people.
That's why he didn't favor one weapon system.
He didn't care. He didn't care.
Right.
He could just do it with anything. That's exactly right.
Did he have a background in interrogation? Because it sounds to me like he's a lot of stuff he did was like he was an expert at it.
Yeah, because of the rapport that he carried on with, especially his first victim. I mean, that again shows you how calm he is. He's just toying with them, screwing with them. Yeah.
And where else
so
did you learn cryptography other than in the military?
Very
right.
Good. And see, that's another point. Good point. So you know, this I'm leaning toward the military guy because this dude is smarter than he acts. I mean, I think he misspelled the words on purpose to throw him off. But then if anybody's looking at it, they're going to go, well, if he can do cryptography, you know, this is, you know, he's not stupid. A military background would put him, he would have been especially if he'd been in Vietnam or seen combat, he would have been able to, he would have been versed in different ways to kill the enemy. The guy wasn't, he was, and this could also explain how come he's so calm under fire, so to speak. Yeah? Maybe that's an angle that needs looked at.
You know, either it's he's done it to others or it's been done to him. And he, either way, he would know firsthand.
True. Especially the bind. Hmm. How many of them did he bind? Just the male and female at the lake?
Well, again, since we're not really sure which of the other victims were really his, we know that he bound them. But those were the only ones. The other two couples were shot in the car. He just walked up and shot them. And then the cab driver, he just shot him in the back of the head in the car. So I don't guess there's any way that we can really say how many were done off by knives and tied up with ropes. We really can't tell. So
and he seemed to be comfortable with a pistol because even though it was like 28 feet, whatever it was that the girl ran, I mean, he shoots the dude in the face, getting out of the car. The female gets out, starts running, and he just shoots her. Just, you know, and he hits her. He's not spraying rounds. I mean, he's putting bullets on target. You know, if he shoots her five times and her running, and I know she's close, but still, yet it's dark. You know, think of the circumstances. You know, this, you know, back in the day, I did a lot of competitive shooting. Some of the things you would do at night, you'd have a flashlight on your handgun, but it's a whole different ballgame shooting at night because you have a tendency to shoot high. So you have to know that, I mean, if this dude placed five rounds in her back, he knew exactly what he was doing. So he shined the light. He had to shine the light on her, and it, you know, there may be some ambient light from the vehicles, but now to hit somebody running without actually screaming, and you shoot her five times, and apparently he shot her five times before she hit the ground. I mean, does it say that he walked up and finished shooting her, or all five? Or, I mean, just think about that. You know, even if he shot her two or three times, and then he would, you know, he just walked up and while she was laying there and finished her off. Another, you know, he's done this before. Now, he wasn't nervous. You know, he shoots a dude in the face, then he just shoots this chick on the run, and he does it really quick.
Yeah. So those are good things to think about, and we need to maybe take one more look at this guy and see if any of these things have been explored, because they are. So I guess what we'll do, we've kind of drawn a line here as to what we can really say about him before we have more research. So what I'd like to do is I'd just like go around the room. I'll start back with Devin, then we'll go with Tony, and then Papa Stroh, and then I'll finish this up. So Devin, what do you think about the Zodiac Killer? And especially since you're in Los Angeles, well, you're, you know, being in California, you know a lot more about the Zodiac Killer because of the scuttle that goes around the state than we do. So what have you got to say about this case?
Yeah, you know, it's just a very interesting case. It has a lot of different aspects that you can think about. But I think what stands out the most is just how it's still unsolved after all this time. So it really is kind of like something that sticks out for a lot of people. And I know a lot of people have spent many, many years studying it and trying to piece it together. So from that, in that regard, it you know, the murder is very successful because he was not ever caught.
That is true. So he did what he wanted to do. We don't know what happened to him after that. Kind of like D.B. Cooper, but we don't know about him either. All right. Well, Tony Filosi, what do you think? What are your closing thoughts?
I would like to know if they – I'm sure they collected the shell casings from the Saints. I know they got a partial palm print off of a phone, a pay phone. I wonder if they, you know, when they gathered the casings up, if they took fingerprints off the casings. And I don't know, you know, back in those days, I don't know if they would do it now, but if there was a database of servicemen, you know, if they were fingerprinted or identified in ways like that, and if they run it across the database, I would like to know if they fingerprinted the shell casings, and has that been run through a modern database?
Right.
You know.
Okay. Well, those are good questions. Thank you very much. The one and only Papa Stroh, what are your comments?
Well, as we discussed, there's definitely a background in interrogation and mind control with all that was going on with the Zodiac Killer. And also agreeing with the others here in the panel about there being more than one involved, and it was very well organized, more or less. And I there's so many questions that need to be answered, but I feel that this the whole situation runs much deeper than we think. And I agree with Devin that it could very well be part of something even bigger.
Exactly. And it could be that one of those couples was the real target. But if you killed multiple couples, that might throw some people off. So we do not know. And that's what I think. So I want to say thank you to everybody for being with us on Murder 123, a very confusing and very complex situation of multiple murders. He claims 57. Public opinion claims 5, maybe 7, depending on how you count it. But there's obviously more than that. And it's going to take more time and more interest to figure this out. But I liked what everybody said. So I think that we've got a lot more to chew on, and we will do this at another point very soon. And I wanted to thank everybody for being on the one and only Murder 123. We'll be back next week. Robin will be better, we hope. And we look forward to having her back as usual. And it's always great having Papa Stroh, Tony, Devin, and I'm always glad to be here to convene the round table. So we'll see you guys next week on Murder 123 and Papa Stroh. I'll see you Thursday night on WCW Retro, 9 p.m.
I can't wait.
All right, guys. Take care, and thanks so much for being with us. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks,
everyone. Good night, guys.
Bye.
Thank you all.